Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, a public health reporter for KUNM. Our Public Health New Mexico project provides in-depth investigative coverage of public health issues and poverty. July marks the 69th anniversary of the Trinity Test, which happened right here in our backyard at White Sands. The impact locally of this moment in U.S. history is gaining some national attention. The National Cancer Institute is coming here to estimate how much radiation New Mexicans were exposed to when the bomb went off. Our state played a central role in ushering in the atomic age. What are the long-term effects of the Trinity Test? What does it mean to us today that the first atomic bomb was detonated right here in our home state? Joining us to talk about the Trinity Test and its impact are Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and Heather McClenahan, Executive Director of the Los Alamos Historical Society. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about your connection to the Trinity Test. Heather McClenahan, your organization preserves the history of Los Alamos, including the Manhattan Project. What kind of interest is there in the Trinity Test and the scientists who developed the first atomic bomb?
Well, there's a very big interest. More than 35,000 people a year come to our museum in Los Alamos from all over the world. We've had visitors from, in the last year, more than 40 countries and every state in the United States. So there is a big interest in the history. People want to know not just what happened, but about the people who were involved, and that's the stories that we try and tell, and what life was like, what they were doing. Living with censorship and muddy streets and those sorts of things, but also working on this incredibly huge scientific project.
Do you have a personal interest in the history?
I guess it's something that's grown over time. I started out as a 20th century historian, and then moving to Los Alamos and getting involved with the Historical Society is where my interest grew. And so over the last dozen years or so, it's really been the focus of all that I do. And so it's become more and more personal over time.
Tina Cordova, tell us the story of how you came to be involved in this issue.
Well, I grew up in a community as the crow flies, probably about 35 to 40 miles downwind of the Trinity test site. And, you know, all my life I realized growing up in that area that there was, we were all keenly aware that there was testing going on, you know, around us. I was born in 1959, well after 1945, but even when I was a child growing up, there continued to be testing going on out at White Sands Missile Range. And so I got involved because maybe about 20 years ago, we started noticing that there was a very high incidence of cancer and autoimmune diseases in my community. And so I myself and a late friend of mine, Fred Tyler, we co-founded an organization to start taking a look at what the true health effects from the Trinity test were. We wanted to bring attention to the fact that people have been sick and have been made sick. And then we also wanted to explore the possibility of bringing funding to the communities in and around Trinity and actually the entire state of New Mexico, because there's a fund set up to compensate people whose health has been damaged and primarily downwind of the Nevada test site, although, you know, New Mexico were the first downwinders. And so that's how I got involved in the subject matter.
Okay, let's talk about the time of the test itself. Heather, set the scene. What were those days, even the hours right before the test, like for the scientists? What was on their mind? What was the weather like?
Well, you have to remember that they had been working on this project starting in early 1943, and their goal was to bring about an end to the war. And, one of the things that was so important to them was every day there were American boys out there dying. And so the closer that they could bring, or the sooner they could bring the end of the war, then those boys would be coming home. And so there was a ton of pressure on them to get this device, these devices built. There were actually the two bombs that they built, the uranium bomb and the plutonium bomb. The engineering and science for the uranium bomb was fairly well understood, and they didn't believe they needed to test that. But the engineering for the plutonium bomb was quite complex, and that was why they decided to go ahead and do the test before they used it in war. And they were working 6 days a week, often 10, 12, 14-hour days. And it was just, as I say, a ton of pressure that they put on themselves because they wanted to bring an end to this conflict that had affected millions throughout the world. And as the test drew closer, the tension just got bigger and bigger. And there were some tests that they did actually just a couple of days before Trinity back in Los Alamos. And there was some fear that the bomb was, or the gadget, they didn't call it a bomb, that the gadget was not going to work. And, you know, Oppenheimer especially, he had lost a ton of weight. He was chain smoking. He was just nervous all the time. So they got down to Trinity. They had the bomb core down there, and of all things that would happen, they put all the components together, and it was in the morning. They drove the core of the bomb out to the gadget. I gotta quit calling it that. Out to the test site, and the casing for the gadget had been sitting on the desert floor all night. So it was kind of cool, and they put the core into the casing, and it didn't fit. Because the core was hot, the casing was cold. It took about 10 minutes. They came to equilibrium, but that 10 minutes was very, very tense, very nerve-wracking. Finally, they got everything put together. They got the gadget up into the tower, which is a 100-foot tower on the Trinity site. And one of the reasons they had chosen this particular time, you know, the monsoons in New Mexico usually happen in the afternoon. Your rain happens, and then it's done, goes away. So they didn't expect any storms. But lo and behold, here it is on July 16th, late on the 15th, and a thunderstorm rolls through. And so here's this 100-foot metal tower with an armed atomic weapon in it, and there's a lightning storm.
Wow.
Which, again, makes everybody very nervous. But, you know, the storm finally cleared out just in time. So at 5:29 on the morning of July 16th, the gadget was tested. It was a successful test. And the scientists then, you know, there was just a huge, you know, weight off their shoulders. I was reading something, I think it was I.I. Robbie, one of the scientists who was involved, said that Oppenheimer almost looked like he was, you know, strutting around after that. He had been so nervous and so upset, and then all of a sudden, okay, it works. We did our job. We can go ahead and send these things out to Japan and see if we can end the war now. So there was a lot of excitement and pride on the one hand. On the other hand, there was also a lot of, you know, as Oppenheimer himself said, you know, I have become death, the destroyer of worlds, that quote from the Bhagavad Gita. And so there was this nervousness. It's like, what have we unleashed as well?
Tina, you interviewed people from Tularosa who saw the detonation of the first atomic bomb but didn't know what it was because it was top secret. How did they describe it?
Well, the one gentleman comes to mind, Mr. Madrid, who was on his way with his mother and his brother and then another woman that carpooled with his mother. His mom worked out at Holloman Air Force Base. And they were on their way from Alamogordo to Holloman Air Force Base, and they were on what's called the overpass in Alamogordo, and it's a high point in elevation of the highway. And he says that it was something so dramatic that they thought the world was ending. In Alamogordo, I think they're 45 miles from the detonation, and he said that his mother pulled the car over and said they should fall to their knees and start to pray because they actually thought the world was ending. He describes it as this huge mass of fire and smoke, and he said that it was so intense, and they actually saw it on accident, and he said it impacted their eyesight for the rest of his life. He said it's impacted his eyesight. So it was massive. In those small towns in and around the Trinity test, you know, the people were awakened by something that was far brighter than the sun itself. Some people who were outside working said that they felt like the sun had come up and gone down. It was an intense blast and witnessed in many, many areas in and around. And so most people described it as something that they thought meant the world was ending. That's how, you know, enormous it was.
General T.F. Farrell described the explosion this way, quote, "No man-made phenomenon of such tremendous power has ever occurred before. The whole country was lighted by a searing light with the intensity many times that of the midday sun. It was golden, purple, violet, gray, and blue. It lighted every peak, crevasse, and ridge of the nearby mountain range with a clarity and beauty that cannot be described but must be seen to be imagined." So we'd like to hear from you today as well. Has the Trinity test impacted your community in New Mexico? Did you know there were people living nearby when the bomb was tested? If you did, how did you hear about it? What's your reaction if you didn't? Call now, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Tina, you mentioned in a previous interview we did together that the blast didn't really unfold the way scientists expected it to. It was bigger than expected, right?
That's correct. Some estimates have been that it was 5 times larger than what they expected. So yes, indeed, it was far bigger. I think some of the things they learned at Trinity also enabled them to go to Japan and detonate the bombs there in a different fashion. So yes, it was far greater than what they expected. And had a radiation field far larger, I think, than they expected.
Heather, what can you tell us about the expectations on the bomb versus what actually happened?
Well, the scientists actually had a pool where they were betting on the size of the detonation, the equivalency of the TNT. They had done a test previously with 100 tons of TNT that had left a crater so that they could use that crater and blast radius to get an idea of what this bomb did. And then, of course, Fermi did an experiment that's way beyond my understanding of science with some scraps of paper and how they blew and all that sort of stuff to determine. Originally, they thought it was about 18 kilotons. Turns out it was about 20. And I.I. Robbie was the one who ended up winning that bet in the pool. But it was bigger than most of the scientists expected. There had been, of course, early on concerns that, you know, as they're doing this, would it ignite the atmosphere and set the whole Earth on fire? And they had pretty much determined that was not going to happen. But there was still a little concern about that. They also, it was bigger. They also really did not understand anything about the effects of the radiation. That was something that until Trinity and until the bombs were dropped on Japan and scientists went in and were able to study the effects there. And then really with Operation Crossroads, the Pacific tests that happened in 1946, that is when scientists really started to come to a greater understanding of what the radiation effects were, how far the radiation went, how intense it was, all those sorts of things. So it was new and it was unknown, and the Trinity test was sort of the beginning of understanding what it was all about.
And you can see that when I was researching this story, the first thing that comes up are these photos, these kind of amazing photos of scientists wearing just like goggles or sunglasses, watching the blast from really, really close by. They go to the site right after the bomb has detonated. They're picking up the glass that's on the ground. So it just becomes really evident that we didn't at that point at all understand radiation.
Right. Right, that's exactly it.
I don't think there was a good understanding at that point, especially of what the long-term effects were from exposure to radiation. And so, yes, indeed, you are right. And I always tell people, you know, the scientists themselves were damaged by the test, by the, you know, the build-up to the test and the test itself. Through this work that I've done, I've become friends with Enrico Fermi's granddaughter. And in talking with her, she's told me that her mother, her grandfather and her grandmother all passed from cancer. Her grandfather within 10 years of the test. And so even the scientists who worked on the project were damaged by the radiation exposure, more than likely damaged by the radiation exposure.
So we have an email comment coming in from Rachel, who wanted me to clarify that the Trinity test site is part of what is now White Sands Missile Range and not the White Sands National Monument, to clarify for readers or for listeners. So we're talking about the Trinity test today, which was the first ever detonation of an atomic bomb, and it happened right here in New Mexico. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Support comes from Los Alamos National Laboratory, presenting Sound Science, Seeing, Building, and Moving with Acoustics. Talks take place in 3 locations from July 29th to August 5th. For information, 667-7000 or frontiers.lanl.gov. The work of British artist Paulo Klein Uber is collected worldwide by luminaries from rock stars to sheikhs to Hollywood directors. His work is owned by MGM, ESPN, Bentley and Nestle, and hangs in the Berlin Museum of Contemporary Art. Paulo Klein Uber lives part of the year in New Mexico and generously donated a painting to KUNM as a raffle fundraiser. The painting, valued at $20,000, is titled English Green Wall. See a photo of the painting and purchase raffle tickets at KUNM.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We're talking about New Mexico's nuclear legacy and the Trinity Test. The National Cancer Institute is coming to New Mexico next month to estimate how much radiation people may have consumed after the Trinity Test. New Mexicans in 1945 often grew and raised their own food. The Institute is coming to learn about the diet and lifestyle of Native Americans and Hispanics in the state and what they were eating and drinking. Joining me today are Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and Heather McClenahan of the Los Alamos Historical Society. So let's put this in context a little bit. Heather, talk about the war and the days that the scientists were working on the atomic bomb and the bomb's impact on the war and what they were hoping to accomplish.
Well, they hoped to accomplish bringing the war to an end. The Manhattan Project started in earnest in 1942 after the United States had entered World War II. And, World War II, it's very hard, I think, for us today to understand the impact on the entire nation. Millions of Americans went to war. Hundreds of thousands of Americans were killed, and there was rationing of food, there was rationing of gasoline, there was rationing of tires for cars, and the sacrifices that people made were just enormous, both family sacrifices, sending their sons, brothers, uncles off to war, and the sacrifices on the home front. And so it was a massive undertaking that the entire country was involved in, and there was great fear that Nazi Germany was going to develop an atomic bomb because the atomic research at the time had been centered in Germany. German scientists were making all kinds of inroads into atomic understanding, chemistry and physics. And so President Roosevelt agreed with some scientists who determined that we really needed to build a gadget, a bomb, to race against Germany to beat them to this horrible weapon. And so the project was started. General Groves did not want anybody to know about it. He was very concerned about spying, and so if the scientists were going to be talking about it, they were at universities all over the country, and he didn't want them sending letters or telegrams or anything back and forth, so he brought them all together into one spot. Dr. Oppenheimer, who was the scientific director of the project, had spent summers in New Mexico for many years. He loved New Mexico. He had a home up in the Pecos, and he, his great desire was to combine his love of physics and his love of New Mexico. And having a top secret laboratory that was hidden, that was away from coast, that would be, hard for spies to get to, was sort of a great way for him to combine all of this. So Los Alamos was chosen as the site for this top secret laboratory. And as I said earlier, the scientists were just, it was almost frantic, the work that they were doing, because they really did want to bring about the end of the war. And there's a lot of controversy today about whether the bombs should have been used, whether they were needed. I think if you look at the overall context and picture, yes, the Soviet invasion of Japan certainly had an impact on the emperor declaring surrender. And yes, there are other factors involved, but certainly the atomic bombs brought an end to World War II. And that was what the scientists wanted to accomplish.
Okay, next we're going to take a call from Don in Albuquerque. Don, you're on the air. Do you have a question or a comment for us?
Well, 69 years ago, this next Wednesday, August 6th, the United States atom bombed Hiroshima, Japan, and that bombing murdered 166,000 people, over 50 times the number of people murdered in New York and Washington, D.C. on 9/11/2001. The United States is the first and only nation in human history to atom bomb whole cities of people. The U.S. massacred mostly women and children in Hiroshima. Many of the men had gone to war. Friends did not recognize each other. Some no longer had faces. Eyes melted in their sockets. Noses and mouths were open poles. Many people completely evaporated. Some moved like scarecrows, holding their arms out from their bodies to avoid the agony of raw burns rubbing together. Sheets of skin trailed from their fingertips. Some reached out to help the severely injured, then drew back their hands. They were holding gobs of charred flesh. Reservoirs of water filled with dead people who looked boiled alive. And I ask, is this treating other people as we want to be treated? Is this loving and doing good to our enemies? Is this conquering evil with good? Is this loving our neighbors as ourselves? Are people in this city of Albuquerque proud of Sandia Weapons Lab or Los Alamos Weapons Lab? For 35 years, I have paid no federal income tax. I refuse to pay for these mass murder weapons and for war itself.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment, Don. Next, we'll go to Glenn from Jemez Springs. Glenn, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having this. Just kind of sad to me. I didn't hear everything Don was saying, but a couple of things that I think about when I think about this whole tragedy that we did. Why did the military people, Truman, whoever, decide to drop it on civilian populations when military sites were available where the same message would have been conveyed that we have that kind of deadly power to destroy? I think it's on the conscience of this country forever that we wiped out 200,000 innocent civilians or more. A chaplain, a Catholic chaplain, was on the Enola Gay that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. And it was a conversion experience for him. When he came back, he did a 180 and became a very vocal peacemaker, saying, you know, that was such a mistake and horrible. And, you know, I think of our world right now. I think of all of these missiles that are buried right close to Albuquerque. My son and daughter live right next to all of that. And so many people, my prayer would be that we abolish nukes, but maybe our world is just too war crazy to ever do that. So when I drive through Los Alamos, which is just 45 minutes from me if I go north, I always say that prayer that, you know, somehow people understand this, as I see it, craziness, insanity, nuclear assured madness, as they said in the 80s, will end, that people will see what this is and get on with loving the neighbor instead of destroying the neighbor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for your comment. We're going to take another comment from Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
You know something? I do really appreciate this station bring attention to all this nuclear radiation and, you know, water contamination issues and our environmental issues. It's, you know, very important. But I did, you know, want to bring to our public's attention that more people die from every year from auto-related accidents, whether it's drinking and driving, texting, cell phone driving, negligent driving, careless driving, reckless driving, you know, autopilot, some freeways. We die more per year than all the police, movie theater shootings, you know, the school shootings, domestic violence shootings, everything put together, believe it or not. And to me, you know, I think people dying from cars is more of a pressing issue than everything put together. And so last year in Bernalillo County, 51 pedestrians got killed just in the in our county in 1 year. I mean, that is that's atrocious. I mean, we do have to work on environmental issues, but that has been my, you know, big activism is to, you know, increase pedestrian and bicycle safety, whether it's bringing in red light cameras. And also, I just wanted to mention from, shows that study the people's mind, that what is it? Our mind is hereditary. You know, whatever our ancestors had to deal with, or whatever they were programmed to be afraid of, like mountain lions or spiders or snakes bitten, our mind programs that as something more of an important issue.
Well, and the hereditary issue is actually part of this conversation today. We're talking about the Trinity test particularly because the National Cancer Institute is coming to New Mexico next month to estimate how much radiation people may have consumed after the Trinity test. Now, one of the things that comes up is that after the Trinity test, New Mexicans still grew and raised their own food. And the Institute is coming to learn about the diet and lifestyle of Native Americans and Hispanics. Tina Cordova, your organization has been saying for a long time that Tularosa community has suffered as a result of the Trinity test. Can you tell us about the effects Tularosa has seen through the generations?
Sure. First of all, if you look at the statistics kept by the, you know, our own government, the cancer rates in the four counties surrounding Trinity, which are Otero, Lincoln, Sierra, and Socorro, have as much as 6 times the national average of cancer. And, you know, I always tell everybody, if you take a look at how people were living in those small communities in 1945, it's really interesting because by today's standards, it would be considered entirely organic. People had gardens where they grew their own vegetables. They had orchards where they grew their own fruit. You know, they raised animals, cows, for not just for meat, but for milk. And by the way, milk is a very high source of radiation exposure. They raised goats and pigs. And then they supplemented all of that by hunting for deer and rabbits and quail, birds of all sorts. And so they were living very organic. Also to be noted, many of those small towns did not have water systems. I know in Tularosa they had just established a water system, but it was very expensive to hook up to, so people couldn't afford that. And so people collected water, not only from, you know, into cisterns for use in every way that water is used, for bathing, for washing their clothing, for cooking, for drinking. They also had acequias or ditch systems where they drew water out of and used that water as well. And so every part of their life was very, very organic, very, very much how we strive today to eat and to live. And all of those things were damaging to their health. And so, you know, nothing, the government never came back and said, take care with all of this. And to be honest with you, Marissa, even if the government had come back and said, take care with all of this, I don't think it would have been enough. In and around the Trinity site in 1945, in about a 45-mile radius, there were over 19,000 people living. Lots of times people think it was an uninhabited area and that there weren't there were people living as close as 10 miles to the test site. And so it was not uninhabited, as some people think. And people were exposed to radiation through everything that they were doing. And so, you know, it's pretty obvious to me that the radiation exposure is what has led to the high incidence of cancer in those counties.
And this has affected your own family, correct?
That's right. I'm a cancer survivor. I had thyroid cancer when I was 39 years old. I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And the first question the doctor asked me was, when were you exposed to radiation? A lot of people don't know this as well. New Mexico holds the distinction of having the highest incidence of thyroid cancer in the country, and thyroid cancer is caused by radiation exposure. My father passed away from cancer a little over a year and a half ago, and he had 3 distinctly different cancers. Two of them were oral cancers, which he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't use chewing tobacco, and the doctors told us this is very rare for somebody who doesn't have risk factors, you know, to get 2 distinctly different oral cancers. But my dad was a high consumer of cow's milk. And when he was a kid, 3 years old, the day the bomb was detonated, they drank nothing but fresh milk. Even when I was a child and born in 1959, we would go to the dairy and get fresh milk. And, you know, that's how we we got milk. And so I attribute my dad's death and his cancers directly to the radiation exposure he received. And so, yes, absolutely. My mom's sister recently passed from breast cancer, and we have a high number of women dealing with breast cancer in and around the Trinity area.
So we're here today talking about the Trinity test and its long-term impacts in New Mexico. Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Or toll-free long distance, 877-899-5866. Now, Tina, something you said kind of brings up a question for me that I've been wondering for a long time. Why weren't New Mexicans evacuated? I mean, I understand that there's secrecy, but maybe they could have just evacuated everyone without explaining why. Either of you know?
Well, today, by today's standards, they declare dead zones around areas where there's been a radioactive leak, like Fukushima, like Chernobyl. In New Mexico, honestly, back then, there should have been a dead zone declared. But again, as I mentioned earlier, there were 19,000 people living in and around Trinity, and the government had no mechanism in place for evacuating 19,000 people and relocating them. And so that wasn't done, and I think part of it was the whole secrecy issue. But I also think it was just that they had not planned, nor did they have the means for evacuating 19,000 people. And that's a very unfortunate thing because, you know, we know people were overexposed, and we know that it has had health effects, and the government has never ever come back and done a full-scale epidemiological study to find out exactly what those effects have been. And people have suffered all these years. And I think the thing that's very difficult for me is that there is a fund set up for the downwinders of the Nevada test site, and that fund has never been expanded to include New Mexico. We were the first downwinders. And sometimes I ask myself, is there something special about the people downwind of Nevada? They actually lived further away from the Nevada test site than the people in New Mexico. What makes them special? And it's really hard for me to reconcile this. This is a very difficult thing for me to reconcile.
And do you think the fact that the National Cancer Institute is coming now is maybe the first step to seeing some of those funds expanded to include New Mexicans?
Well, a lot of people don't realize in New Mexico that there was a 10-year study conducted by the Centers for Disease Control, and it's called the Los Alamos Historic Document Retrieval and Assessment, the La Hadra study. You can Google search that and locate it. It's an extensive document. It took 10 years for them to develop the final report. There is a part of that that was dedicated to Trinity. As they went through all the declassified documents in Los Alamos, they determined that they had to pay attention to what happened at Trinity because it was such a huge part of what Los Alamos, you know, existed for. And there's a whole chapter, Chapter 10, dedicated to Trinity. And they've already surmised or sort of guessed at what they think the exposure may have been. And part of that says that they think it could have been as much as 10,000 times what's considered acceptable today as exposure. And so our government has already taken a look at this. Now, the National Cancer Institute study is a process that will be conducted to figure out what the exposures were and what the cancer risks were. And I think that that's important, and I'm glad to see that they're coming here. What we need to do is continue to press our congressional representatives for more funding so they can continue, so the National Cancer Institute can continue this study, and we can finally get to some conclusion about, you know, what the exposures were and what the cancer risks are. And then we can maybe start taking a look at how do we make this right? How do we reconcile for people the fact that they were, and I say this all the time, it's sort of my tagline for what we're doing. We were unwilling, unknowing, uncompensated guinea pigs in this huge science experiment and left to deal with it on our own.
Okay, we're going to take a comment from Bill in Las Lunas. Bill, are you there?
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Yes, I had some relations that lived near Carrizozo and Ancho, and my mother and my oldest daughter would go visit them regularly and spend weeks over there. The relations, they died early in their 60s. Their children died in their early age. My mother died in her 60s. My oldest sister died in her 60s. My oldest brother died in his 60s, but of course he also was affected with Agent Orange. My uncle used to bring crystallized sand to the house from the site, and he would put it in his barn. The indigenous people at the Nevada site has been bombed more often than anybody bombed in our wars. Thank you. And I'm concerned about genetics. The genetics on my family are very weak. And I've always asked doctors, and they said it's probably genetics. But my mom died of a mass in her body. My sister died of breast cancer, and so on. So thank you for the time.
Thank you for your comment, Bill. Next, we're going to go to Simon in Albuquerque. Hello, Simon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to mention a book called American Ground Zero by Carol Gallagher, which documents photographically the people up in Nevada. But they already knew in the 50s, through a federal study, that there would be tremendous effects on the population at large from radioactive fallout. In fact, they estimated back then from Nevada that there would be 16,000 to 32,000 more deaths from cancer. So they had a very good idea what would happen to people who live near the Trinity site. So I agree with your the commentator who said that we're just guinea pigs. And again, I recommend the book American Ground Zero by Carol Gallagher. It's in the library. Thank you for giving me my time.
Absolutely. Heather McClanahan, what do you have to say to Simon's comment that they already knew in the 50s what the effects of the radiation exposure would be?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. By the time the 50s came along, they were starting to understand this. I want to go back to your question earlier. Tina had commented on this, and I just wanted to follow up about why they didn't evacuate the 19,000 people. And I think it would go back to in 1945, they didn't know. They really did not understand the effects of this. Two of the things that happened right after the end of the war was it's very famous in the movie Fat Man and Little Boy. John Cusack has the radiation accident, and that actually did not happen during the war. It happened right after the war, and there were two of them. The most famous one was the Louis Slotin accident, where they were they called it tickling the dragon's tail, where they were essentially, I say, messing around with the plutonium. And it slipped. They actually were trying to hold it up with a screwdriver. It slipped. It fell. He grabbed it with his hand and pulled it out, saved everybody else in the room, but died a horrible, horrible death from radiation exposure. And doctors learned a tremendous amount about radiation exposure from this incident and another one that happened at the lab actually before that. And again, looking at the data that came out of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, looking at the data that came out of the tests that were done at Crossroads. And so it was in the 1950s that they really started to come to an understanding of the problems that radiation caused and what it could do. And so, again, I think it was just there was some ignorance. You know, we didn't know. We were also in the middle of war, and they were trying to get the project done. And so there's a lot of that going on as well. And we need to keep everything in historical context when we're talking about this and not try and judge it from today.
Well, and that comment actually begs the question, when they did discover, you know, what long-term effects to radiation exposure was, why didn't our government come back then? Why didn't we see them back in the 50s to start doing health surveys, to start doing screening, to start helping people, you know, to take care of their health in a way that we hadn't before? And so truly, that really begs the question for me. Why hasn't the government been here since the 50s when they knew exactly what had happened, when they knew exactly you know, what the effects were, when they knew that people were going to be made sick? That actually just, you know, begs the question for
Right,
me.
Because here we are now 70 years later, and why haven't they responded? And that is a great question.
Exactly.
All right, give us a call. Join the conversation, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or toll-free long distance, 877-899-5866. We're talking about the Trinity test today, which happened 69 years ago in White Sands. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break.
Adopt a pet at the Mission Possible Adopt-A-Thon August 2nd and 3rd when CABQ's Animal Welfare Department and Animal Humane team up to find homes for all the pets in their care. This mission is possible. Animal behavior advice, training sessions, live music and games at 615 Virginia Southeast, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. with adoptable kittens, cats, puppies, and dogs who need forever homes. For complete details, call 505-938-7892. A message from the tax-exempt Animal Humane New Mexico.
Have you ever wondered why some children succeed while others fail? There's no more important issue for New Mexico, since 35% of our kids drop out of high school, one of the worst outcomes in the nation. So I'm really pleased to be joined today by Paul Tuck. His just-published book is How Children Succeed, Grit, Curiosity, and the Hidden Power of Character.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about New Mexico's nuclear legacy and the Trinity Test. Joining me today are Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and Heather McClenahan of the Los Alamos Historical Society. I think we'll go first to a comment from Norman in Albuquerque. Hello, Norman?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Do you have a comment for us?
Yeah, I'm calling regarding your show. Thank you. It's very important, the information that's being presented. But I come from northeastern, the Four Corners area, and the horrific uranium legacy impacts on our DNA, our land, water, and air continues to this day. I find it amusing when expressed surprise at the federal policies regarding the nuclear industry. I heard a comment here today that in the 50s that they didn't know the impacts of the uranium radiation. Through the research over the years and being an advocate against uranium mining on our lands, The federal government knew full well the impacts of the impacts of uranium radiation, and speaking on behalf of thousands of Navajo miners and hundreds of families that are still impacted today, there's still unclaimed uranium mines on our lands that the Navajo Nation government has been trying to close and remedy. It's really difficult to explain how America and the United States government allowed this travesty. It's horrific. I mean, I've worked with miners who, over the years, who have now since passed away. Now the wives and the children of the miners are experiencing the radiation impact effects. So it's a horrible legacy, and The New Mexico state government is allowing exploration of an in-situ leach mining as we speak now here on the Navajo Nation, even though the Navajo Nation developed a ban on uranium mining on our lands. The New Mexico, the state of New Mexico government is still allowing that process to continue and ignoring the Navajo Nation's ban. So it still continues today, and I just wanted to share that our people have suffered greatly. Our grandparents, our uncles and brothers were sacrificed for the United States to become the greatest power, quote unquote, in the world based on their nuclear legacy. So I just want everybody to know that the suffering still continues. The legacy is still real. And the state of New Mexico is allowing this legacy continue in support of in-situ leach mining in the Church Rock, New Mexico area near Gallup, and not respecting the Navajo Nation's ban. So I just wanted to say that and say thank you to all of you that are there.
Thank you, Norman, for your comment. Let's go to Linda from Santa Fe. Hello, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to give a brief comment on Heather's statistics regarding the thyroid cancer. I'm a registered nurse and have worked in Santa Fe for 20 years now, and I have seen the intense amount of patients that come in with the thyroid cancer. And myself and my coworkers would say, let's see where they live. And we, among ourselves, came up with the fact that, yes, indeed, people from certain areas were coming in with the thyroid cancer. So I appreciate that public announcement of the percentage, and I think that that needs to be more public, that people know this. And so I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you very much. So I just want to touch on this very briefly, but we saw this week the premiere of a new TV series called Manhattan, which fictionalizes the building of the atomic bomb. It seems like so far the story is very much about the scientists, their consideration of what they're building, their patriotism, their competition. New Mexicans are very much background characters on the show so far. We see shots of Native American children, and there's a Hispanic maid. Tina, is it fair to say that New Mexicans have largely played a background role in the national retelling of the story of the Trinity test?
Well, I think that's very accurate. We have always just been in the background as it relates to this, and the true story, the entire story of Trinity has never been told. All we ever see is the story as it relates to industry and science, but the people's story has never been told. And that's very frustrating for me, because the story of industry and science has been told over and over and over again. And while I have regard and respect for the movie industry and what they're doing in New Mexico, and I'm going to watch Manhattan, all 13 of the shows, I just want to say that it's a sad shame that no one has ever developed the story that includes what happened to the people afterwards and what continues to happen to the people afterwards. And I have to say that, you know, Norman's comments about the uranium mining, the uranium miners are working with the downwinders here in New Mexico to expand the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act to include them as well. And so, yes, absolutely, we've always just been the background characters in the way that industry and science have told the story. And it's time for the whole story to be told. It's time for people to know the entire story and the sacrifices that were made by people here in New Mexico to the production of the bomb.
What's your take on that, Heather?
Take on Manhattan? Or
take on Manhattan, or also the background role that New Mexicans play in the telling of this story?
Well, I think the role that New Mexicans played was huge. The fact that so many of the workers in Los Alamos during the war came from the Espanola Valley area, the pueblos that were nearby, the project could not have happened without them. And I think the show is depicting them only as service workers, but certainly they were involved in technical aspects as well, and they were just a huge part. In fact, again, one of the reasons Los Alamos was chosen was because there was a nearby workforce of folks who could come in and do all kinds of work on the project. The show Manhattan is going to keep us in business for a long time because, you know, they are Hollywood, and we enjoy the fact that that the show is taking place during the time of the Manhattan Project. But, you know, our job is to tell the stories of the people, and that's what we try and do. And we are going to have a lot of folks, hopefully with a lot of curiosity, coming in, and we'll set the record straight.
Marissa, as an aside to that, if anybody's listening who works in the production of Manhattan, please give me a call so we can discuss further telling of the story and add the people's part of the story, the people of New Mexico, the villagers and the native people, so that we can add their part of the story to the, you know, to the telling of the Trinity test.
Well, and I'll tack on to that, that if anyone wants to reach out to you, they can reach out to me by emailing mdemarco@knm.org. We're going to go right now for a comment from Bob from Albuquerque. Bob, are you there?
Morning, Marissa. Yes,
good
thanks.
Morning.
I have a personal connection to the downwinders that were mentioned there earlier, and all this was like triggering a lot of thoughts for me. I was in the Air Force in the 60s. And worked on the Nevada test range, and we worked on the surface area in my field of demolitions, and we went into all those areas where there'd been underground tests that were leakers, but the Department of Energy and the Air Force never told us that the whole area was contaminated from these underground tests. And so for a long time I didn't think too much about it. He thought, well, this is all okay. But then the Downwinders campaign in Utah, people got very active about it, and I began to look at it more, and I realized that I had been exposed in those areas too and have had a cancer and treatment since then on all these things. But I wanted to tie this in a little bit to the politics because it made me start looking into it a lot more, and someone mentioned it earlier there too. And this thing about the Manhattan film really fits it because I think there's a move in our society to try to make these weapons acceptable, mass destruction, and because politically the system wants to try to use them and go at it again, so they're trying to soft sell and dress all this up to make it like a reasonable policy. But David McReynolds wrote a good article years ago called The First Shots of the Cold War, and what he was talking about was the Trinity test and the use on Hiroshima of the nuclear weapons. And what he was pointing out is that this was the beginning of a long period of history now that we call the Cold War, and it wasn't aimed at Japan and people of Japan, but to the leaders of Moscow, because there was a developing struggle at the end of World War II between socialism and capitalism, and it was the first shot to try to intimidate the leaders of the socialist bloc, which had actually been very effective in defeating the Nazis, and were getting ready, as someone said, to occupy Japan too. And so they sacrificed all these people and all of us who were innocently years later into this ideology to try to take on this larger global struggle of geopolitics. So, and now we're dealing with it. And I'm glad this study is coming through here because I don't know what we can do, but the political issue, I think, is underneath it and still there. The Manhattan show, I think, sort of shows us that nothing has really changed politically, and we've got to work harder on this. So I just wanted to thank you for doing this and all the folks that are there talking about it. So I'll let you go. I know we're almost out of time.
All right. Thank you so much for your comment. We are almost out of time. Tina, how would you like New Mexicans to be remembered in the history of the Trinity test?
Interesting question. There has been no recognition for the people in New Mexico who sacrificed so much to the Trinity test, none whatsoever. For the first time ever, there was a speech delivered by Senator Udall a few weeks ago on the Senate floor in Washington, D.C., and it may be the first time ever that there was recognition that people were damaged and have suffered and have gone unnoticed by our government. And so truly, I just want there to be recognition, and I want there to be compensation for people. And I want everybody to understand that, again, we were unwilling, unknowing, uncompensated in this, guinea pigs, in this largest science experiment in the history of our world.
And Heather, what would it take to make something like that happen real quick, if you can?
Sure. Well, that's what we do. That is our job, is to tell the stories we're the Los Alamos Historical Society. We're a community historical society. We tell the stories of the people of our community and our surrounding communities. We are in the midst of a new exhibit plan, and Tina and I have talked, and we do hope to be able to share as many voices about this as we can, not just from the science and industry perspective, but from all of the people.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to our guests, Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and Heather McClenahan of the Los Alamos Historical Society.
Thank you, Marissa, for hosting this. We thank you and KUNM for bringing attention to the issue.
Yeah, thank you very much both for being here. You can read and listen to more about the health effects of the Trinity test online at publichealthnm.org. If you missed any of this program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, kunm.org, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. Find us on Facebook by searching for KUNM Radio, or follow the public health team on Twitter at KUNM Health. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Michael Hust screened your calls. Kaveh Movahed assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the McCune Foundation and the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. I'm your host and KUNM public health reporter, Marisa DeMarco.